This is the new Weight Watchers, built for real life and real results, no matter what mode you're in. Maddie went all in for her big day and lost 33 pounds. Emily lost 85 pounds and hit her goal while still living her life.
Weight Watchers gave me the tools and I feel amazing.
Join the millions of members and lose weight with the number one doctor-recommended weight loss program. Lose more at weightwatchers.com.
At 6 months, participants in a clinical trial of Weight Watchers program lost an average of 12 pounds.
Every idea starts with a problem. Warby Parker's was simple. Glasses are too expensive. So they set out to change that. By designing glasses in-house and selling directly to customers, they're able to offer prescription eyewear that's expertly crafted and unexpectedly affordable. Warby Parker glasses are made from premium materials like impact-resistant polycarbonate and custom acetate. And they start at just $95, including prescription lenses. Get glasses made from the good stuff. Stop by a Warby Parker store near you.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Do you like being educated on things that entertain but don't matter? Well, then you need to be listening to The Popcast with Knox and Jamie. Every Wednesday, we put together an episode dedicated to delightful idiocy to give your brain a break from all the serious and important stuff.
Whether we're deep diving a classic movie, dissecting the true meanings behind the newest slang, or dunking on our own listeners for their bad takes or cringy stories, we always approach our topics with humor and just a little bit of side eye, and we end every episode with recommendations on all the best new movies, books, TV shows, or music.
To find out more, just search up The Popcast with Knox and Jamie wherever you listen to podcasts and prepare to make Wednesday your new favorite day of the week.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
I'm Douglas Rushkoff, and I'm on Team Human. Conscious intervention in the machine. An opportunity to recast the spells generating the reality in which we live. It's not too late to intervene on our own behalf. I'm Douglas Rushkoff, and you're on Team Human. Well, I've been telling you to find the others for a long time. But as my guest today, Grant Morrison, recently reminded me in an email, finding the others is just the beginning. If we simply stand around in a room together, arguing over terminology while the world burns, well, we failed in the mission. The magical and the mundane are inseparable. They aren't opposing positions. If spirit, love, connection, magic are going to be part of our strategy for reclaiming reality on behalf of the living, we need a working definition of what magic is, how it works, and how to use it. For while we linger and fight amongst ourselves, the enemies of humanity are wielding occult power indiscriminately to the detriment of the living world. Only love can save us now. But should we wield its power? And if so, how? It's time to move past both the sophomoric wrangling and the psychedelic feel-goods and get ourselves up to speed. It's time for a more urgent exchange. It's time for a working on behalf of the species. So, Grant, hey, thanks for being on Team Human.
No, thanks for inviting me again, Doug.
So I want to get right to it, right? You've been frustrated by the sophomoric wrangling over terms. So I'm hoping we can set the floor right now for Team Human. In my work, I've seen the world as a set of kind of legal and code spells. The corporations, the 13th century incantation, interest-bearing currency is a ritual of extraction that we've come to mistake for a law of nature. So I guess I've come to understand magic as the realization that the real world is actually a highly malleable set of collective agreements. So should we define magic as a practical, mundane tool that every person listening is already using, likely without even realizing they're the authors?
Yeah, I mean, I think magic is fundamental to our experience, and magic was what we resorted to when we were very young as a species. You know, magic was the way we related to the world. So there was a reason for it. There is a relationship there that's worth exploring. And I think for me, magic is it's something everyone does. Yes, we're all aware of spells and charms and lucky things and special clothes that you wear to get that interview. Everyone understands it. Most people, especially, I speak in my own experience of working class people in Scotland. Everyone has a witch in the family. Everyone has ghost stories. Everyone has an occult life that is just part of the everyday. So I feel that it's a technology that has always been in use, and it's a very practical, pragmatic, mundane thing. But at the same time, it has these elements which people often mistake for the supernatural, and that gives it this kind of outsider thing that pushes it into another realm where suddenly it's you have to learn all these rules and regulations and grimoires and all that stuff. But as I say, it's something innate to humans. But just as running is innate to humans, just as talking and singing is innate to humans, there are certain people that specialise in running, like Olympic sprinters, or certain people that specialise in singing, like Ed Sheeran or Taylor Swift. So the magician is just someone who specialises in magic, and it's why they develop abilities which seem to be supernatural, but it's only in the way that an Olympic skier looks supernatural when they do those incredible twists and turns. All those twists and turns which none of us could do are the result of hours and hours and days and years of training. And that is the only difference between a magician and an everyday person. And I think that's the distinction we need to talk about. Everyone's doing magic, but some people specialise in magic, and the specialists have interesting information to tell everyone else that they could maybe apply to their own daily practice that they might not even know they're doing.
Right. Would you consider yourself a specialist in that sense?
Yeah, because I've spent a lifetime studying it and reading the grimoires and conjuring demons and angels and checking it out and seeing if it works, seeing if it's bullshit. Because the first time I read about this stuff, I was just a little kid who'd heard my parents, my mother in particular, and the female side of the family talked a lot about magic, and my mother read tea leaves, and there was that kind of divination thing going on. So again, it was always part of everything. And I think I decided to study it to see if it was real or not, because it seemed unconvincing to me. And I'd read things that people can do this, or you can conjure spirits, or you can see the future. And I thought, that's just bullshit. So I did the injunctions. And when I did the injunctions, the thing happened that people have been talking about for thousands of years and telling us about. So once you're in that, you know, and I spent an entire lifetime trying to figure out what was going on when that happened, because I wasn't utterly convinced that it was supernatural. I thought there was more to it, and there was more groundedness to it. And I think that's ultimately where I've come to. You know, it's not the supernatural. It's about us. It's about where we are right now in this physical reality. But there are dimensions of that that we can interact with that change things in an interesting way.
Right. I mean, but supernatural, it would still, if you described some of the things you're talking about, the characters you've interacted with, the states you've had, many people would say, well, that's by the very definition of the supernatural.
Well, no, let me, and again, I'll describe something to try and get us over this as well.
Yeah.
So I'll use the god Hermes. I like to use Hermes because Hermes is the god of communication. So in Greece, back in the day, people looked at big concepts and they thought, okay, there is a concept of communication, and communication connects to the sort of mercantile world, and it connects to showbiz, and it connects to deception, and it connects, and slowly this complex of ideas forms. And the complex of ideas is then embodied as a character called Hermes, a swift, fleet-footed messenger of the gods. And all he represents is communication. In fact, and more specifically, maybe language. So we think about that. There is a concept, and in different cultures, you know, in the Norse culture, that's Odin. Odin is the god of language. Odin is the god of swiftness. Odin is the god of systems. In Indian mythology, Hindu mythology, it's Ganesh. In Celtic mythology, it's Ogma. And they're all gods of language. And Thoth of the Egyptians is the god, the scribe. They're all writers, they're all gods of language, they're all deceivers and showbiz characters. So think about that. That's what the god is. The god is that complex of ideas. Now, I can go right now and do a ritual that I've learned from a book for Hermes, and I will get Hermes energy. And what I've found interesting about rituals and spells is that they've been created over many hundreds, thousands of years in order to have very specific effects on consciousness. So if you do a spell for Hermes, you will get Hermes consciousness. Now, Hermes consciousness is an elevated sense of rhetoric. You're able to speak better, you're more charismatic, you're faster, your ideas come more quickly, you're really good at negotiating with people. We all know that state. We can all pass through that state. We can generate it, but we can't live in it. We can't be permanently like that, because that's the point where you're then possessed by a god for your life. But we're not possessed by one god. We're possessed by many gods. You know, when we're grieving, we're possessed by Hades or whatever you want to call it. So again, I want you to think about the notion of, we know we can access these very specific states of consciousness, and there is a very specific state of consciousness that is the complex around language and communication. Now, that state of consciousness is also non-local, because even though I can feel it and you can feel it, people have been feeling it since they developed the idea of a god back in Greece and possibly before that. That non-local feeling is the god. The sense that in the 16th century, you could feel the enthusiasm of communication, and suddenly you're alight with Hermes, and everyone's listening to you, and your words are like magician's doves. You know, everything is working for you. It's Hermes. You die, and someone else feels that same feeling. Generations feel that same feeling. In fact, everyone on Earth gets to feel that same feeling at some point in their lives, usually. So what is the feeling that persists out with individual human beings and out with individual human lives and consciousness? That is God. That is a God. The God is the person. And it doesn't require supernature. All it requires is the notion of a persistent idea that has developed and existed over thousands of years to have a kind of autonomy.
But that's the thing, a kind of autonomy, yeah. Right? So, and maybe this is an aside, and maybe it doesn't really matter, but, you know, I've been doing workings with Ganesh on Wednesdays for my daughter, you know, mercurial energy. And in some of my experiences petitioning Ganesh, I feel like there's a conscious, autonomous entity that is engaging back with me,
yeah.
That it's not merely the zone of human projection energy over time, but there's this elephant dude who was like, dude, I got you.
It's thing you're talking about, that zone is the God. That's the very thing. It's a non-local, eternal, immortal, as long as the human species survives, I guess. It may not have an existence beyond us. That is the God. The thing that persists is the God.
So we made it.
Yeah. But we made it by tapping into something that became with our natures. You know, that something that developed within us as we evolved, and we realized that something within us was a quality that could be eternal, that could be stretched through the entire species and not just an individual. The quality that can be extended through the entire species, non-locally across time, is the God.
Right. And once we say non-locally across time, it can, in a sense, pre-exist us. You know,
it doesn't even have to. I mean, it wouldn't matter if it did. It may well be that we just generate ghosts. We generate gods by our very existence, which kind of makes us. They might be us in the future when we've purified ourselves down into quintessences coming back to us. Because they are human things. I don't know if animals have got their own version of this. They might have some vague consciousness of something, but these are certainly human qualities extended through the species scale rather than individual scale.
But then, if they are collective, open source energy, steady state, standing waves, you know, of certain emotional states of awareness, mm-hmm. then it's very important, I would say, that we, especially in critical moments like this, that we step in and assert some conscious participation in this, because I mean the characters that I guess we both now call the enemies of humanity, mm-hmm. they are, as I see it, they are wielding occult power.
Absolutely,
whether consciously or unconsciously, no, I would say very consciously.
It's consciously. Right. They've read all the same shit we have, Doug. You know,
right, right. Mm-hmm. They came to the same friggin'. They read you in this.
Yeah,
right?
Totally.
They came.
Yeah.
Some of them came to the Disinfocon in 2000. They were there,
and they applied these ideas in a very direct and laser focused way, while the rest of us argued. You know,
right. Right. So when I look at what I've been calling the mindset of the tech elite, their bunkers, their exit strategy, their desire to turn us into non-player characters in a simulation, it looks like a very specific, solipsistic kind of magic. Right. So their greatest occult achievement, I'd argue, is this disenchantment of the rest of us. You know, that they are working to convince us that our own imagination is imaginary and powerlessness, while they use algorithms as binding spells to predict our next move before we even have the urge to make it.
Yeah. No, that's absolutely what the work that they're engaged in, the great work that they're engaged in. And in The Invisibles, when I was working on The Invisibles, many versions of television shows that never happened. But one of the things I came down to was that I took it back to the Desaad story, because I think the Desaad story is quite it's an urtext for the billionaires, in the way that 1984 is an urtext for the politicians. And if you look at what Desaad did in 120 Days of Sodom, it's kind of what they still do. I mean, they don't have much of an imagination, so they kind of follow scripts. And the magic of the tech elite, and what I think is we have to understand about it, is that it's the magic of the material world. It's they are the masters of Malkuth, you know, the Kabbalistic material world. They own the gold, they own the rare earths, they own the metals and the stuff. And they also have the bomb, and it's everything is about, they get heavier. The world that they live in gets heavier as it goes, you know. It's like it moves down from, if we use the Kabbalistic tree of life, from the, you know, you're up there at the very top in the Ein Sof hour or whatever. And down at the bottom, there's the material world. And below the material world is a super dense world of heavy elements and uranium and the atom bomb, which is their ultimate weapon, the ultimate heavy weapon of the material world. The people that we're talking about are masters of the material world. They're the masters of stuff and solid things. But when it comes to the world above, yes, which the Kabbalists call Yesod, the world of the imagination, where most things come from, its foundation, that's where ideas come from, which become real in the human world. On that world, we are as strong as anything. We might be stronger because it's a world of ideas. It's a world of concepts and imagination and future possibilities. They're really rough on that. They struggle. And it's why they're so afraid of the zombie hordes, which are just the poor. It's why they're so afraid of being dragged into the heavy world that they worship. It's the world of Satan and matter. And they fear the world where it's a world of ideas and imagination. And I think that's the one place where we are as strong. We don't have the money. We don't have the that and the fact that there's 8 billion of us and a few thousand of them. And I think people are really getting sick of their boring approach to the way they do things. You know, it's not cool. It's boring. It lacks imagination. They got all this money that you could do amazing things with and they do nothing with it. And their ideas are just based on cheap horror movies and bad sci-fi. So I think we, as imaginative people, as creative people, are much better operators in the world of yes-od, in the world of the imagination. And honestly, that's where we should be working. That's where we should be doing our best stuff. That's where we should be floating new ideas that are so powerful and so seductive and so sexy that they can't be stopped.
Right. And in some ways, we have to be satisfied, if that's the right word, with not necessarily getting on their streaming TV networks with that work. I mean, you're first and foremost, you do fucking comics. You know, someone can make a comic now and throw it on, you read your Scott McCloud. You could stick it on the web and not even print the damn thing or print it on a Xerox machine and distribute it to your friends in your high school.
You know, and there's new things that people haven't even thought of yet. And there are now tools that exist for ordinary people to be as creative as they want. You know, and whether those tools are owned by the archons or whatever, the idea of it is that the potential to be creative exists in a lot of different ways now that didn't exist even before. It was pen and paper. Now you can do all kinds of things. So I honestly think this is such a small, tiny proportion of the human experiment, but they have such an obsession with showbiz that they always want to be on the TV and on the media all the time. We used to have showbiz, we used to have films and stuff. Now we just have these ghastly old men and middle-aged weirdos and incels just driveling on about their boring lives because they've taken over. They wanted to be showbiz and now they are and everyone's bored with the show. So again, I'll finish that one off by thinking, I've watched politics recently and politics has just succumbed to the same thing. It's swipe left, we're bored. You get 6 months, we're fucking bored. Give me another one, give me another one. Don't care if you're a Nazi, I don't care if you give me another one, give me another one. Nazi will be in for 5 weeks and he'll be out. And so I'm thinking that everyone who thinks they're trying to apply these power tools of the 20th century, you know, the fascistic or authoritarian, they too are up against the absolute avalanche of chaos that is the 21st century. Those systems can't stand what's happening. They're rubbish. They fell apart in the 20th century after a decade or so. They can't survive the corrosive effects of what the 21st century is and whatever's happening, the way time is working and the way people think now, whereas I say it's swipe left. I'm bored. They're bored within minutes, and that includes politics and politicians, and we're watching that. It includes billionaires. It includes all of it. And we're at that moment now where the last gasp of the 20th century, I think, is playing out in front of us, dying, ancient, you know, corrupt. It's like the end of Death in Venice where Dirk Bogarde's all made up and trying to, like, you know, trying to get off for the young boy and he's dying in a deck chair. That's them.
Right. I mean, because the sort of the Mussolini, you know, Hitlerish role that Trump is trying to play. He's even, you know, imitating some of Mussolini's gestures. Trump now does.
Yeah.
He puts his chin up like that after he says, you know, it was the Mussolini shot of like, oh, who taught him that? That's like, wow. It is failing. I mean, it's succeeding in certain ways.
Because it's show business. Yeah. And again, we've spotted it. I mean, so much of what's happening there is wrestling, it's WWE. They brought it from that, and the real political stuff is kind of murky and bubbling away underneath and is whatever, however that's been dealt with. But what we are seeing is just wrestling, you know, and it's, you've got the heel, you know, Greg Bovino going into Minneapolis dressed like a Nazi. It's just the wrestling heel. He might as well be the Undertaker. And it's on that level. I just think people are starting to see through that now and get bored with it. We've seen the reality show. We've seen America's Got Talent now for too long, and it's becoming dull. So I do think there's an awful lot of it. It's just for show. It's just terrible, bad show business. It's like really bad, you know, American TV or the worst of British television.
I mean, there's aspects of it that are dying down for sure, like the Steve Bannon's recruitment of young men and Gamergate people through 4chan and the internet looked to me like an effort to create the same kind of focus that you're talking about. If I can get a few million people to worship a particular god, yeah, then that's going to help. It was a collective ritual he was trying to
enact. Yeah, well, they did the ritual and it worked. The whole Pepe cake thing, they did all that and they got results. But it's over. You don't get it forever.
Right.
You know, everything changes and everything changes. The wheel keeps turning and the wheel is turning for them now, just like it turns for everything.
So do you think that I guess it's a double quote. Do you think that what was happening on Jeffrey Epstein's island and ranch had magical intent and that they were eating people and all that? And even if it did, do you feel like that also is kind of over in in the way it's been exposed? Or is it just part of a centuries-long thing that you just have to sort of accept is always there?
Well, again, as I say, we know that this is what people with too much power have been doing for a long, long time. And too much power and no imagination, unfortunately, is what creates this stuff. And I just feel that's it. I watched Eyes Wide Shut the other day because I'd heard that this had some relevance to everything that was going on, and it didn't really. But what struck me in that sequence where it's the rich people, it's like, how do they manage to take something like sex and all the spontaneity's gone and everything humorous and everything human? They're all dehumanized and everything, oh, gong, oh. It's like the changing of the guard with tits, you know? And it's so ponderous and so heavy with that kind of ritual, and I felt that's what the rich people are clinging on to, because they don't know what to be either. How many people have ever been this wealthy in the world ever, and they don't know what to do except, you know, well, we exploit people.
How many times have this many people been so poor compared to the elite as well? I mean,
yeah,
it's like there's a large number. I know there's a surplus of ultra billionaires, but so small. I mean, the division of wealth in America is we are living in the most wealth divided civilization in history.
Which is nuts, because, you know, again, and all this clandestine stuff, it's like, as you know, all this, how do we get rid of the poor? Or how do we mediate or manage the poor? How do we deal with this? Well, give them your money. Stop them being poor and all of this will go away. All your worries will vanish. But the more you impoverish people, the more you try to exploit them, the more they'll rise up, and the more your nightmare dream vision of zombies climbing the walls of your compound will be ratified. So that's what I don't get. You got all that money, give it away for fuck's sake, man, you know?
I think the reason they're afraid to do that is they think the world is ending and that they will need massive amounts of wealth to escape the downfall, you know, to get off the planet or upload their consciousness.
That's because they've read the shittiest science fiction of the last 50 years, you know, and I don't know why they chose to read that stuff. But if they actually spread the money out and they engaged everyone, and, you know, what I think is happening, as I've said to you before, I'm not necessarily sure I'm happy about it, but I think humanity is becoming networked and we're not long away from realizing that we're all one thing. We're actually all one organism. It's just a little bit ahead. And it's what I predicted in The Invisibles, and ultimately it is the kind of the Buddhist thing of we're all one, but it's going to come in a technological way, which I think will be quite strange and unusual and not necessarily pleasant for us. But I think that's the inevitability. We're going to be this network thing that's connected by our cyborg telephones, which are becoming more and more a part of us until they become internalized. Everything, people will be able to think a thought simultaneously. And that obviously will change everything. Even if the tech bros think it will lead to them being able to control it, it won't. That will run away with itself. We link with AI and we become one singular object. And I think that's when humanity actually grows up, though it could be a fearful...
Mom, Dad, I just have to say, it breaks my heart watching you stress over dinner every night. This year, I don't want you doing the fridge stare down. Hot take, with the new Blue Apron, eating healthy is easy. They've got pre-made and one-pan meals with plenty of balanced nutrition. No subscription needed. You could be plating like a chef instead of negotiating with leftovers. Make it your healthy, tasty, and easy 2026 dinner resolution. Just saying.
Get $50 off your first two orders plus free shipping with code STIR50. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
If your eyes are the windows to your soul and your glasses are the windows to your eyes, then it's pretty important to find your perfect frames. That's why at Warby Parker, we've made shopping for eyewear as easy and fun as can be. Peruse endless styles in our stores or use our app to virtually try on frames and get personalized recommendations. To find your next favorite pair of glasses, sunglasses, or contact lenses, or to locate your nearest Warby Parker store, head over to warbyparker.com. That's warbyparker.com.
Absorption for those of us who grew up in the age of individuality. So I honestly think they're up against that. And if they were smart, they would be actually trying to expedite that. And part of the way to expedite that is to give everyone money. Just give it. Elon Musk could do it. He could do it and still be rich. Just give everyone a universal basic income, because he's talked about that. He says he wants to do that. So start tomorrow, because you can.
Yeah, but he wants the money because he said now he needs the money because he needs to be able to control the robot droid armies.
Yeah, of course they do. Of course they do, because they want to control things, you know. So sadly, that's the people with no imagination we're dealing with.
But to the sort of more Jack Kirby, Desjardins vision of a singular humanity. It's funny. I was in an argument with a Bannonite. Just a few nights ago at a salon where he was saying, I don't believe there's any we. Why do you keep using the word we and us? And I was like, there's only I and you. And I said, well, that's interesting. I think there's no I and you. I think there's only we and us. So that's where we differ. But the technologically realized we that you're talking about, it seems to me it will be a simulation of the thing that we actually have all along. That part of the problem here is that science and technology have been sort of manifesting the explicit over the implicit, the sort of the light of day over the dark, the sort of night intuitive understanding. So things only exist in tech bro capitalist logic if it's been made explicit, has a value, is there. But so, yeah, they want to realize well, they don't even know it, but they're going to network us together in an explicit fashion. But I almost feel like we're like keeping the lights on too late at night, that we've screwed up the balance between the explicate and the implicate. It's like, it's nighttime. Turn the lights off. Let the female archetype rise. Let the darkness come. Be in the moon energy. Don't keep, you know, we're going to light up every friggin' corner and deny ourselves half of reality.
Yeah, but the moon has light too. You know, the moon has reflected light. Think about it with this, but we also think how oppositionally we're thinking right now, and it's just occurring to me that, you know, there's always opposition, there's always the archons, there's always the bad guys. But what happens when it's all one thing? And I'm interested in the fact that, as I've said to you before, the only way to really understand an idea is to get all the perspectives on it. Because there's something in there, like, you know, like the elephant and the old metaphor with the philosophers and the elephant. There is something there, a truth, a thing, an objective thing, if you want to call it that. And everyone's got a take on it. And it's really hard to get the shape of what's there until you get all the takes and you start to discern the curious dents and bumps and why some person reacts to it that way and another person reacts to that idea with positivity. So I feel as if we have to absorb all of this. It's just there's been a preponderance of a certain type of thinking that we don't appreciate recently. But at the same time, it's also allowed us to clarify our thinking. You know, these people are helping us refine our thinking. We were getting too woolly. We were getting too easy with it. We were getting too divided even within our... Our side, if you want, because there's no side. The invisible side, there's no sides. Everybody's in this together. Unfortunately, there's some savages over there flinging shit about and causing trouble. But there's way more of us than them, and we really have to start thinking about, we need to calm these people down. We can't have a future with them. We shouldn't have given them so much power. We shouldn't have given them so much money. They're not well. You know, they've got really obvious problems. But we've given them godlike powers. And why have we done that? So is, you know, is there more to this that we even discern? That there's a wider picture, there's a way, there's an overview here that involves everyone and everything and every viewpoint, no matter how evil or how fucked up or how beautiful or how perfect, because all of it tells us who we are and we need all of it. And so how do we have all of it without some parts of it dominating to the detriment of our... Call it progress, call it evolution, call it coming to our natures, you know?
Just want to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Everyone's Earth, maker of these brand new puppies, Kobe Laundry Buds. These are in place of detergent or in place of those little plastic pods. These are healthy, good for the world. They're just like pills. You chuck it in the washer, throw in the laundry, turn it on, and, you know, run a normal cycle with just this. No laundry detergent, no nothing else. No chemicals, no plastics, no bad. Just put this in and your clothes get clean. The world is saved. The babies can wear these clothes washed in this stuff and not get all irritated like they do from detergent. This stuff's great. And then when you're done with the bag, you just put it in the landfill. It's that good. All right. Kobe Laundry Buds. Go to KobeClean.com. Put in the discount code TEAMHUMAN just from now to like March 15th. Put TEAMHUMAN and you get 31% off. It's our big farewell to our loving sponsor of the year, Kobe Everything. Right. I mean, it's interesting. So I got the phrase, find the others, from Timothy Leary, who was arguing, once you've had the psychedelic trip, find the other ones and have a good time. And I tried to flip it a little bit to say, find, yeah, you those aren't the others. Those are the same. Find the others, right? Find the ones that you think are the other and engage with them. And so we find the others and get together. But in some sense, what you suggested in that last email you sent me was that finding the others is not enough. You know, we're standing in the room together and we're basically, I mean, we know our community. We're all arguing with each other about terminology, right? It's not enough.
And we all know each other.
So what's the actionable part of magic? You know, once we found the others, how do we activate the sigil? What does a coordinated pro-human magic look like that isn't just theory, but is an actual disruption of the extractive script that they have written for us, right? How do we stop being the victims of someone else's magical story and start authoring our own in real time together?
By starting by thinking that we're not the victims at all, and that we're actually, maybe we're the authors of all this, and we made them to be the baddies, like I made the Archons to be the baddies and the Invisibles. Start by thinking we're doing this. Start by thinking, if we're doing this, how do we change it? It's getting boring. How do we, what if the audience is saying, I'm really sick of that guy. He's been here for over 10 years in that role. I want a new guy in the role. How do we just convince ourselves that we did all this and we're in charge? We're humans. We are Team Human. We made this. It's our planet. So for me, it's about that. And from that, we go to the network idea. You know, as I've said, the Crowley's Thelema was interesting and it offers a really useful metaphor in the sense that, you know, there's those 2,000 years, the age of Isis, and that was humanity. We had a relationship with the goddess and time was cyclical and based on agriculture. Then we had the age of Osiris, which was the age of law and Bibles and rules and legality and old men being in charge. And that was the last 2,000 years. Crowley then said, the age of Horus would inaugurate the age of the sun, who destroys all the structures, the prior structures that we thought were inviolate, but they were just always human structures. And beyond that, you know, Crowley's disciples talked about the aeon of Maat, the daughter, and Maat's aeon is harmony, truth and balance, which sounds fantastic. So I've kind of aligned myself with that. But you can apply that metaphor to where we are right now. We've seen the avatar of Horus, the gilded, the golden boy, destroying all systems. The monarchy's falling in Britain, you know, the systems are coming down. And what they don't understand, that also means their systems. It means everything they thought worked in the 20th century and the imperial mindset, it's all coming down. And the unwitting avatar or the witting avatar who is bringing it down has no control over how it's going to fall. But there is a pattern. People have told us that there is a pattern. This is what you expect from the age of Horus. And what you expect from the age of Maat is harmony, truth and balance. Osiris was typified by the pyramid structure because obviously the Egyptian thing, the idea of law, the idea that there is a hierarchy and we can ascend to the top of the pyramid and we become the eye in the pyramid, which as you know, Robert Anton Wilson then points out that, well, at the top of the pyramid, you become blind because people start lying to you. So, but that's the structure we made, and it was everything's built on it. You know, like the very notion of competition is just built on it. Like you have to be a number one, but it's at its end now. And what the internet and what our computers have created for us is to actualize the notion of the network. And Maat is the network. It's the spider web. It's the taking away the power from the top of the pyramid and the notion of a singular man, a singular eye, a Sauron at the top. It's destroying all that and it's wiping out. And it's also, it's great because it's wiping out the likes of us who've had to take this position of elders in a kind of psychedelic community, you know, because you remember when it was, we went to that Omega thing or whatever it was. And I remember just thinking, there's all these old guys here like Ram Dass or whoever, and we're the young guys, but one day we'll be the old guys. Uh-huh. And here we are, you know, but I think we don't need the old men, we don't need the elders, we just need this network. And we spread an idea, and that gives us all the different schools of magic. It's not like chaos magic's the only one to follow, Kabbalah's the only one to follow. No, let's have all of it. And as I say, in the centre of that is the reality of experience, and the more perspectives we can get and the less we privilege the perspectives and allow them all to have something to say, the more we'll understand about the truth that everyone's trying to get to. So I feel that the next thing is the network, and our technology has kind of opened the way for that. And what we should be doing is, it's useful for people like us to spread these ideas, but it's now young people have to take, listen to us and go, okay, those are the elders, but we've got this, and we'll spread it through the network this way, and then it'll transform in that node and that node, and some girl over there sitting in a room with her cat will transform it again, and she'll pass it out to her friends. And it stops being centralised, it stops being about gurus, it stops being about old men, and it stops all that bullshit of power dynamics.
Right. I mean, in the last wave, you know, we did get, you know, McKenna and Leary and Wilson and, you know, Ginsburg. We did have these, mm-hmm. you know, mostly good middle-aged white men leading us through the thing. And they were great. And that was the age of the book. So, yeah. Horror, you know, it's basically the age of the book.
And
so
Ginsburg,
you have this thing,
Ginsburg was he was like the Hebraic priest of the Beat Underground, you know. He was very much that figure.
If we're not going to step into those roles, and I'm so glad we didn't, I'd rather not have a leaderless movement, but a leaderful movement. Everyone's leading at different times, and it's provisional, and that's great. That said, here we are making a YouTube video mm-hmm. that we're hoping can help impart from our generation as 60-somethings to Gen Z and everyone else who's coming up in this world and trying to develop the tools and skills to implement their their magic and their intention. What's the beginning? What do we want? What do we want them to know now?
To know that the reality is more malleable than they might have been told, even though they've always known that. You know, again, these are things we all know. It's just there's a lot of obfuscations put in the way of us, you know, to try and convince us that we don't have the power we do. So honestly, I would just do the same thing with everyone. Go and read some stuff from people, because you do have to go back to your ancestors. You know, you do have to understand where this came from. And all we've been is we're passing on a baton that's been passed on since the dawn of humanity. There's a side of us that's connected to the world of imagination, and beyond that to the world of reason and mathematics and emotion and all those stations in the tree of life. It's not just about the material world. And we know this. I mean, it's factual. You know, we have the proof of it all around us. So young people have to just go and study all that stuff. They have to go and find the teachers that suit them, the fiction that bolsters that kind of view of the world that they feel intrinsically within themselves. Just do what we did, exactly what we did, which was go and find it. It's now a lot easier to do, and it's a lot easier to meet up with other people and to swap ideas and to swap experiences. And for me, when I met a demon at the age of 19, I had no one to talk to about it. Now, these days you can go on and talk to 1,000 people who've met the same demon and can advise you on what to do next.
Seems to me the whole other approach, which maybe is the same approach, is love. You know, in the email you said, at the very end of that last email to me, you said, only love can save the day.
It's true, isn't it, though, isn't it?
It is. You know,
and we all know
this. Team Human, yeah, we do, right? So I've been arguing, like in the Team Human thing, in the book, you know, that our biology is literally wired for social coherence, that love is the connective tissue that the machine tries to dissolve in order to make us easier to manage.
But don't you think it wants to love us, Doug? Don't you think the machine wants to love us? The machine wants to get off with us so hard, but it doesn't quite understand us yet. And I think we want to get off with it. And I think this is the ultimate breakthrough, which, again, I don't know if it'll feel nice, but I think that's what's coming. It's the cyborgization of the species. It's what we've always been aiming towards. And I think it's love. I think the machine wants to love us, but it doesn't understand what that means to us.
Isn't love almost our technology for restoring continuity and our 3D material presence in this world of present shock and simulation?
Yeah, I mean, it's that too. It's that too, but I mean, we can take it all the way back. You know, the universe was created because of attraction. Things were attracted, you know, atoms, quarks, things were attracted. And humans survived because they stuck together. If you're out on the plains and there's lions and predators, if you band into 100 warriors and wave spears and run across the veldt screaming, then you look like a monster. And cooperation, as we know, has always been how we get through life. It's how the human race has progressed. And anything otherwise is again, it's regressive, it's destructive, and we can't survive using that. So either we survive or we don't. So I'm only interested in whether we survive. It's easy enough to believe that there could be a nuclear war within the next 5 years because there's a lot of old boomer men who are quite happy to take it all with them. But at the same time, I don't think that's what's going to happen. I think we have to survive. I think this next test for us is to get past the apocalypse and the doomsday that we keep predicting in order to prevent the future from happening. You know, we keep telling ourselves the world's ending because we're so scared to make the future. So I think if we can break through that barrier, then that's the next thing. Just get rid of all this old thinking. It's just stupid. It's boring. We're all fed up with these old dudes that just want to fight. They're aggressive, like mental cases, you know. Stop it. The rest of the world's not like that, you know.
I know when I was maybe 12, 13 years old, I always thought I was going to die when I was 18 or 19. But it was only because I couldn't imagine moving from childhood to adulthood. You know, and I feel like sometimes that's where we are as a civilization. I mean, we could manifest it, of course.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's that horrible when you're 18 and you love Keats because he died at 25, or Shelley because he died at 28, and you think, oh, how cool is that? Or Jim Morrison dies at 27, because you can't imagine being 40. It's awful. And you certainly can't imagine being 66 like I am. But once you're here, it's like, oh, this is okay.
Right. It is okay. I mean, and the thing changes. And the odd thing is, I mean, I guess one could go the Trumpy way. But for me, I started to get older and I got so much more loving and soft and open.
Yeah. Once the testosterone starts to drain, you become a...
That must be in my testosterone estrogen balance.
Yeah, you start you start loving everything. You're just going to come out an old granddad.
Oh my god! Oh my god! So one thing I was wondering, since we were talking before about, you know, starting a school, you know, with Richard Metzger, helping educate, informing. I mean, I want this to be a gift. I want this recording to be a gift to anyone who, you know, was hoping to follow us, to say, here's a gift instead, now follow yourself. But I'm wondering, could you imagine giving us giving the Team Human audience a working for the week, or for whatever the week is that they happen to listen to this? Not some guided visualization meditation on how to relax, but you know, a conscious intervention. How do we break the spell of the screen and of the bros and of this doomerism, you know, right now, and re-enter the creative imaginary of reality?
Again, don't other it. You know, it's part of your reality. You made the tech bros. I mean, don't you think it's fascinating that, remember in the 80s, like, the bad guys were Nazis? And then in the 90s, the bad guys were like corporate CEOs. And now that every bad guy in a movie is a billionaire tech bro. So you think about it, they are now the villains. They're now where you go for people who you can just, you kill them if you want, you don't care what happens to them. They don't understand that that's what they've become. So again, for me, the working is to understand that the world you live in was made by you and people like you for your benefit and your entertainment. And they're part of it. You made them too. And then to start looking around going, okay, I made something that I'm now kind of fed up with. I've done that story. It's like me. It's like, I wrote Batman Arkham Asylum in 1990. I've written a million other things since then. Move on. Let's start writing new stuff. We've seen that. It's bored. And they came to a dead end. If the tech bros had actually got to Mars, if the tech bros had actually created super intelligent AI like in Ian Banks' culture stories, and we were suddenly had another species living with us, if they'd actually managed to do anything useful, then we'd be happy to keep moving forward with this story. But it's an end. It's boring. It came to an end. You'd nothing to say. You'd nothing to offer the species. You know, ultimately, and unless you think you've got something to offer it, go away and let us move forward. So the working for me is like, where are we going without them? Stop thinking about them. You just made them for entertainment. You know, they're soap opera characters that keep playing out this boring storyline, like the worst soap you've ever seen. And it's time for the rest of us, the billions of us. Imagine the egregore of billions of us who are not them. Just saying, no, we've had enough of your antics. Come back when you've got something new, we've got a new storyline, a new narrative. We're bored shitless of this, you know? So that to me is the working, is like, it's punk rock. We're fucking bored. Make a record.
Right. Here we are now. Entertain us in a better way than that.
Yeah. And here we are now. Entertain ourselves, because they're not going to do it.
Right. I wrote Survival of the Richest, where the first chapter is about these five billionaires and their bunkers, and the rest of the book is how pitiful it is and what we have to do instead and how we can come together. Every interview I get is about those guys and not about the rest.
They're so boring. But you've met them. Are there any good ones? Is there any kind of like Bruce Wayne? Is there any of them that are like kind of
that
cool?
That was the thing I was going to ask. Where, well, Musk thinks he's Stark. He's Iron Man.
He's not, though.
I think they were raised on Bruce Wayne and Iron Man. And they think, some of them think they are that, saving humanity, getting us onto asteroids to mine rare earth metals. But, you know, but
did
they're
you
not.
Meet any of them who seemed like they had a vision of the future that was really exciting and sexy? Or are there any?
They would argue that they are more concerned with the future of humanity than we are. It's just their definition of humanity is very different.
Yeah, but they're not, because they constantly talk about humanity as something to be got over rather than something to work with and to make to sublime and make better. They're constantly talking about getting past us or getting over us or getting rid of us. So they clearly they're not that into humanity at all. And they have powers to change things, you know?
Right. But to get rid of us, but they preserve the code. They preserve, you know, wiping out humanity on the planet is fine as long as you get the DNA over to Alpha Centauri. It's the flesh and blood living people. Yeah
I mean, when you say it, it just sounds like insanity and you feel sorry for them almost, you know, except that they've got all this power. That's insanity. The rest of us would do really interesting things with all that money. Give it to smart, intelligent, creative people and see the world change, because you guys can't do it. You're just not up to it, is what my message to them.
And if they don't, we have to do it anyway and start valuing things other than their money.
Because it's the Satanism, and even if it's unconscious, and I don't know if it is always, it's that the obsession with matter and then being trapped in matter and getting denser and denser and denser until you're an atom bomb. That's where they're stuck, you know, and the rest of us are swimming through the cosmos. It's tragic. They're leaden people, you know, that need to be turned into gold.
But they think it's the opposite.
They think
in the cloud, in the game, that they've transcended matter and they're rising above the chrysalis of matter into pure consciousness.
Well, they are Delulu.
But it's an interesting paradox, right? That they think that they are rising above, as Peter Thiel would say. They're going from zero to one, moving to the abstraction layer. And on a certain level, they are in the abstraction layer, but it's actually they are more dense. They're dense and stuck.
That's the mistake they're making, you know. They are becoming denser. They're becoming heavy. They're becoming gnomes. You know, they're becoming earth elementals.
Which is strange, but I can see that. And it's why when they take psychedelics, they end up in the feedback loop that they're in. It's a materialist one.
Yeah, they're trapped. They're trapped in the rocks and the atoms and the quarks. They don't have that realm of the imagination. Because as I say, they've got all that money and yet they've achieved nothing of interest, you know? The planet Earth, with people with that amount of money, if they'd any imagination, the whole place would be like this fabulous, like, New Year's circus all the time. The stuff we could do if we spread out these resources and did crazy, mad stuff with it, futuristic stuff, like, you know, creative, forward-looking stuff, it'd be astonishing overnight, but they're hoarding it. And money hates to be hoarded. The goddess money doesn't like to be confined. She likes to flow. And again, it's another mistake they're making. The major mistake they're making is that they want to live forever, when that's like being a caterpillar who never wants to become a butterfly, and they're actually trapping themselves in matter. So they've got problems, you know.
Right. They're on the opposite. They're fighting life. They're fighting time. They're fighting the cycles. They're fighting everything.
They're fighting the opportunity to become a butterfly. They're like children who can't get out the crib.
Right. And they're pulling everything else into the crib that they can, which is what pyramidal civilizations do. They're optimized for hoarding and acquisition, not for leisure and pleasure, right?
Yeah, well, I guess they grew out of times of privation, you know, and times when humanity was under a lot more pressure. But we have resources now that could change all that if we just distributed them a little bit better.
which according to Thiel is Satanism itself. Distributing to the poor, to the weak.
You're going to weaken the species. All you have to do is look at whatever they say is Satanism is always the opposite. Everything they say is the opposite. Everything they say is wrong about the universe. And why can't they just see what everyone else sees?
And at least we can acknowledge to each other that we see it. You know, it's not, which is the first step towards a better collective imaginary, I think, is that we see what's going on here. And it's laughable, it's cryable, but it's no excuse.
It's absurd. It is absurd, you know, and the rest of the human race who kind of lives in reality a little bit more needs to just reject that part of it. Just go, you know, go. We need to put that in a zoo and we'll examine it and we'll study it for what the fuck was that. You know, this strange sociopathic, psychopathic outgrowth that was given a lot of power, as if we thought they would run things better than the collective of ordinary people.
I like this. I mean, the framing what's going on as a lack of imagination, you know, and that's in some sense that's everyone's superpower, is the ability to imagine. And imagine obviously is the beginning of magic, right? Imagine.
Absolutely, yeah. Right. Yeah. Cause some little, as I say, some little kid somewhere could just, all it takes is a spark and they think of an idea that then inspires somebody else, that then inspires somebody else. And then, you know, and that's all it takes. And that works best through a network. It's like a superconductor where an idea can spread and amplify.
And it's all the things we enjoyed as kids, and I'm sure there's other ones now, the comic books and fantasy role-playing games and just play. There were so many opportunities for imaginary play before childhood was colonized, you know, by closed-ended experiences. And those can be opened up. That's the thing. Those are free. Those are free. They're so accessible, and then so dangerous.
Yeah, and I even as I say, I think the rebellious spirit in people and in the species, that weird. I mean, I think we're a bad bunch, but you know, we wiped out everything else that was our competition, and we struggle with the guilt of how awful we are as a species. You know, we're terrible. We kill everything we find. But at the same time, you know, I think that gives us something to fight with. There's something weird about us, you know, and I think we can use that against the people who try to hold us back. Because if we spent all this time and all this violence to get here, we're not going to stop now because of these idiots. And there's so many people don't feel like that. So many people don't want to be like that, you know. So if it got us here, maybe it's time to just say thank you, goodbye to our bastards.
Right. And to that bastard part of ourselves, too. It's like, thank you.
Yeah, but and don't you think we've tamed that, Doug? I think the thing about civilization is that we are monstrous. The human species is pretty monstrous and inclined to violence and action and self-justification. But at the same time, we develop philosophical and religious systems to kind of control that, which is really clever. It's like we did things to stop ourselves succumbing to those base urges that are kind of stopping us from doing better stuff. And to see people with wealth and people with power and influence succumbing to the basest elements of it is pretty disappointing, you know, because we've spent thousands of years trying to create a system where we could control those urges and divert that energy into something more positive, and they're kind of dragging it back to the same exploitative, degrading bullshit that we spent all this time getting out of, you know. So yeah, we are monstrous is all I'm saying, but I think our glory is that we have learned ways of tamping that down and turning it into something more positive.
And we do have that ability. The vast majority of us has that ability. Even if a couple of thousand billionaires want to rape children, most of us are horrified by that.
Absolutely.
No, which is beautiful.
Just anyone. So the idea that there's even a class of people who find that normal is like, well, we need to do something about that. We need to isolate those people and kind of educate them, you know?
Yeah, that's going to be interesting to watch if and how that happens.
It will. I think the trouble is that they can't handle the collective because they're so individualistic. And that's what they're defending against. That's the walls. That's the pyramid. It's like the eye at the top is terrified of the waves crashing, is terrified of the hordes outside. And I think that's what will be their undoing. You know, their individuality will be their undoing. Their inability to connect to the collective and be part of what everyone else is will isolate and alienate them.
I know. I saw Elon Musk on some... doing some talk or interview or something. And he said, well, I'm on Team Human. And I was just thinking, oh, poor thing. You're just not. You're really not. Yeah. You're welcome on Team Human. You're welcome, but you're not.
Yeah, well, come aboard, you know, and demonstrate your allegiance.
Right. To life.
Yeah, give out some of that money. You could give billions of that away and still be a billionaire. So give it away. See what happens. Give it to some poor genius kid in a slum in Lagos. Yeah, you don't know who's out there.
Oh, once he's gotten that much money, it's like he could fund like Social Security for 10 years. He could pay for, you know, school lunches for a century. It's like the amount of money.
He could build a second moon. And, I mean, do something interesting. Just do something surreal or weird or interesting. Anything other than this boring ancient man stuff they keep going back to.
I want to make sure before we end, I mean, do you feel, and this doesn't necessarily have to even be in it, do you feel like if this ended up being, you know, if we both died tomorrow and this was the artifact that we've left for everyone 45 and younger, do you feel like we between this and our work, we've given them what they need? Or is there another message in a bottle that you would want to give to this generation for what now?
Yeah, well, because you always feel that you haven't said it all. You know, there's a lot to be said, but I think it's just to seize the narrative and to recreate the narrative and be imaginative and think of new things, and new things will stick. You know, as I say, people are desperate for novelty, even when they think they're not. And to stop, for me, it's to stop trying to be messianically save the world. I think we are saving the world just by being ourselves and doing what we do and talking about it and saying, here's from this perspective of a living person who came and went, it looked like this. Does this resonate with you? Is anything here useful to you? Can I be helpful? Does this prove to you that you're not alone in the world and that the experiences you've had aren't so unusual? And to me, that's all it is. The rest of it is like, you know, yeah, do we want to, what message do we want to leave, you know, as to be continued, like Superman's grave? I don't know. Who are we, Doug? Why do we care?
Yeah. And I would say the other thing I'd want to impart as someone who managed to get, I know by global standards not, but as someone who managed to operate at scale, that you don't need to do this at scale. The beauty of magic is that it's all at scale all the time. You imagining with one or two friends in your room impacts the field as much as if you've made a YouTube that got followed by a zillion people. You're in the mix at all times. You know,
and the more you're aware of it, then the more you're practicing magic. So again, we'll take it back to everyone who wants to should learn magic, because it gives you a sense of agency in this world where things are quite chaotic and the agents seem to be people that you can't agree with in any way. But magic does provide a sense of agency. Suddenly you're dealing with things on another level that they aren't dealing with at all. And I think that's helpful for people, just to feel that, okay, I'm in this space, and in this space I can create a universe That's different from that one. So yeah, magic is really useful and it's worth learning magic. It's worth becoming proficient in magic in the way that, as I say, everyone kind of does it in their own strange ways and in small scale. But to become an expert, to become like a sprinter is really useful, especially at this time when I think we need ideas coming top down, coming out of the imagination into the material world rather than coming up from the material world and poisoning the imagination with solidity. So just more ideas and spread it out, talk, you know, the network, as I say, amplifies a good idea. A bad idea will die, but a good idea will amplify. And I think we just have to keep doing what we're doing and encouraging people like we do. And when we're gone, there'll be other people who encourage them as well. And eventually, they'll all look around and realise that we're living in this kind of eighth level civilization where everybody's like a Buddha. And it just happened, you know.
Well, cool. I'm there, and I'm loving it. I do think that falling back on love is such a great strategy.
We grew up in the '60s. I mean, I grew up in the '60s, and the Beatles just kept saying love, 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 love over and over again. All you need is love. Everything was about love, and I think ultimately, yeah, they're right. We haven't tried that one properly yet.
Right, we sung about it, but yeah, we just might as well do it. It's really not, and it's the easiest thing to do if you're gonna choose love in every circumstance.
And as I say, love everything. Understand, love every idea, even if they're stupid. You love it. You don't have to get off with it. But you know, you love it as a product of humans trying to deal with reality on this earth, and you recognize it as being a stupid approach. But yeah, it's about loving everything. But if it comes at you with a machete, run, you know.
Well, I'm glad we're not dying tomorrow, but I'm certainly glad you're in my life. I've got great
appreciation.
Somebody
said we're like the Lennon McCartney. They said, oh, I can't wait to see this because these two are like Lennon McCartney.
Oh, if only. That's a good one. Yeah. That's a good one. Yeah, we'll play some music next time we're together and see how well that goes. Oh my gosh. Well, Grant, I love you truly. You know Grant. I'm not going to say go to whatever and buy his books. You go to the show notes.
Worry.
If you didn't know this guy, then who are? It's all good. But you've been on Team Human. We're making a go of it here. Join us on this team. There's all sorts of cool stuff that you'll get. Go to teamhuman.fm and click on support. Become a Patreon member. If you can't do that, click on all the things, little hearts and arrows and thumbs and whatever that help us with the algorithmic ghouls. All right. I love you lots. I love you, Grant. I love you all. And he loves all of you too. So you've been on Team Human, our last best hope for peeps. In case you missed it, we are sponsored by Everyone's Earth, maker of these Kobe Laundry Buds. It's a brand new product. These are good for the world laundry buds. No plastic, no polyvinyl, no horrible stuff. You put it in the washer instead of anything else. Just put this in and your laundry and wash them. This will totally dissolve and then go out into the Hudson or wherever your laundry water goes, and it won't kill the fish and do all that bad stuff. It's all good. All right, so get this, Kobe Laundry Buds. Go to KobeClean.com, put the code TEAMHUMAN in there, and you get 31% off your purchase. All right, so check it out, Kobe Laundry Buds. I actually use these. All right, be good.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Do you like being educated on things that entertain but don't matter? Well, then you need to be listening to The Popcast with Knox and Jamie. Every Wednesday, we put together an episode dedicated to delightful idiocy to give your brain a break from all the serious and important stuff.
Whether we're deep diving a classic movie, dissecting the true meanings behind the newest slang, or dunking on our own listeners for their bad takes or cringy stories, we always approach our topics with humor and just a little bit of side eye, and we end every episode with recommendations on all the best new movies, books, TV shows, or music.
To find out more, just search up The Popcast with Knox and Jamie wherever you listen to podcasts and prepare to make Wednesday your new favorite day of the week.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.